So I want to keep moving forward in terms of this discussion of some of the papers and new data sets that you've been involved with, but I do have to pause for a second. We referred to ESMO a couple times, and I thought ESMO 2016 was pretty wild, you know, with the first line, the chemo, yeah. pembrolizumab, and also an incredible ovarian paper at ESMO. But last year in lung cancer, ESMO totally out of sight. I mean, they're just, they seem like they're somehow they're getting better stuff than ASCO, but
I don't know. It's timing, but they, yeah, they're doing good.
I mean, two gigantic practice-changing papers in lung cancer. Yeah. So one of them I want to ask you about, because it really ties into your case,
yeah.
is, of course, I think across the line, it's been unclear how checkpoint inhibitors are going to play out in the adjuvant or micrometastatic setting. And now, of course, for the first time, and I've got to ask you about, we see data of checkpoint inhibitors in locally advanced disease. The PACIFIC trial, looking at the anti-PD-L1 agent, durvalumab. Can you talk about what they looked at there, what they saw, and what you think it means?
Yeah, the trial called PACIFIC took patients with stage 3 lung cancer who were treated with chemotherapy and radiation, as would be standard, and then randomized those patients to receive either durvalumab, a PD-L1 drug, or the best supportive care, which would be the routine approach. And there was a really remarkable improvement in both disease-free survival, and although not technically statistically significant at this point, there was certainly a promising trend in terms of overall survival. This is really practice-changing from my perspective. The ability to move these therapies earlier and earlier in the disease course means the greater opportunity to not just treat patients, but to cure patients, which is ultimately a much more profound goal. And so the sheer magnitude of the benefit was, I think, particularly impressive.
But you know, it's interesting, before it was presented and we knew from a press release that the trial was positive for PFS, I heard a lot of grumbling about we're in a curative situation, we need survival data, et cetera. But then when the data was presented, at least when we went to the ISLAC in Chicago, we polled some people and it seemed like people were kind of ready to go, so to speak. And it really gets into the question of the survival data of the trial. And is it that there aren't enough events to determine it and it's likely to be a survival benefit, or maybe there's just not going to be when it plays out?
Yeah, I can understand the caution and sort of jumping to a practice-changing conclusion in this setting based on disease-free survival alone. Understandably, the real goal of therapy in that context is cure. And so that's probably most manifest in things like survival. I think the things that changed the tide and just how clear the data was the magnitude of the benefit in disease-free survival, such that even if our like sort of dogma would say we should wait for survival, it seems unnecessary to wait several months or even a year while patients are actively having stage 3 disease now. And so I think the adoption of that change in the presence of a fairly substantial disease-free survival and a really clear trend in terms of overall survival made me feel comfortable adopting that therapy now.